Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the February 16 edition of Commodity Week.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, Aaron Curtis from Midco in Bloomington, Illinois, and Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find us online at WILLAG.org. There you can also purchase your tickets for the all-day Ag Outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. That's coming up on the 7th day of March. That's a Tuesday. And we will have more than a dozen of our analysts there, along with the panelists that will be discussing the Farm Bill. The tickets are just $30. Buy them online at willag.org or call during any business day, 800-898-1065. That's 800-898-1065. Well, let's begin, as usual, Matt Bennett, with this question. What kinds of things should we discuss for the day? What's on your list?
Well, I think, you know, just talking about this week, it's pretty interesting to see the big moves upwards that we saw on Wednesday and then back down on Thursday. You know, just as far as the short term, talking about some of that, definitely need to talk about acreage implications. I know looking at the crop insurance prices, we can weave those into the acreage discussion or, you know, discuss them separately, but the crop insurance averages as well.
And Aaron Curtis from Midco.
I think it's interesting. We've got these corn this week back above $4. Didn't close there today, but we've seen it back about a couple days here this week. November beans kind of up above that 10:30 mark. Run out of steam there a few times here this week. So are those levels that the producer should increase some coverage here as we move into thinking about 2017 harvest?
And Mike Zuzulo.
I think that pretty much covers the basis for the other two, Todd. Maybe the other third thing is, along with what Matt and Aaron were talking about, is I'm getting a sense, I'd be interested to hear from the others, I'm getting a sense of producers getting a little bit more bowled up and whether they need to reflect and reevaluate how much they sell or whether they want to turn into longs or what exactly this market is up to right now in the longer term.
Okay, Aaron Curtis, I'm going to have you answer that question. I suspect, like Matt and maybe and Mike too, that you talk to a lot of producers, but that when you're talking to them, they're actually thinking about making sales, cash sales. Have they been getting bulled up about this marketplace?
Well, I think more, you know, our conversation is more on the elevator side, but they do talk, the producers that they're talking to, you know, just not really getting too excited yet on new crop bushels. You know, old crop, they still got upwards of 50% in some areas. That seems to be a pretty common number, Todd, on 50% of the old crop corn still left to buy or sell from the producer standpoint. So kind of one crop year at a time here. Now, the interesting thing is on soybeans with 80-85% of the beans, you know, kind of on an average sold from the old crop side, we are seeing a little more focus on new crop as producers kind of run out of beans to sell on the old crop side, need to start thinking about new crop, and especially when we're talking about some increased acres. You know, there's been some math being done on what does $10 cash beans mean if I have some extra acres this year and if I have, you know, similar to yields to what I've seen the last 3 years. On a whole, probably 5% or less of the new crop corn has been bought, so that's a pretty low number. And probably somewhere in that, you know, 10 to 20% of new crop beans, depending on where you're at. So been much more aggressive on selling new crop beans and corn to this date, Todd.
Matt Bennett, you mentioned the big moves in the marketplace this week, especially for soybeans, an up day on Wednesday, a down day on Thursday. Does this give you any reason for concern about this marketplace?
You know, that's a good question. I mean, I guess the way that I'm going to answer that, in my opinion, is the way I think a producer needs to be looking at that. You know, obviously you see a big update, and I think, you know, maybe Mike was alluding a little bit to this, that, you know, unfortunately, sometimes whenever we're rallying, our inclination is to get more bullish instead of looking at what that rally might mean to our bottom line. And so, you know, I think that the volatile markets definitely are a little bit of a cause for concern. But I think a producer has to take a look at what do these prices mean to me. And so, you know, even after a down day, you're looking at, you know, awfully good prices, especially whenever you compare to where we were at just a year ago. It was a pretty desolate time talking, you know, commodity markets last winter. Whereas this year, it's a different ball game. You know, you've got soybeans $1.40 above last year's spring insurance price. You've been able to, a lot of Central Illinois Corn Belt producers have been able to sell, you know, $4 basis to Dees and $10 out of the field soybeans. So it's a way better situation than what we were looking at last year, especially whenever you factor in, you know, that input costs are a fair amount lower than where they were at a year ago.
Mike Suzalo, a way better situation than a year ago. You agree with that?
Oh, golly, yeah. And when you look at the November bean price for the crop insurance, I think we're running close to $1.20 or $1.25 over what we ended up with last February. And I think Matt, you know, hit it on the nose. I think that producers are getting a sense of a little bit more upside. I don't necessarily disagree with that, but that does, it shouldn't take you off point. As your hunting or your marketing program should be still scale up sell, in my opinion, Todd. I think the drought monitor, the wheat low technically, and this inflationary buying are three good reasons why you want to reevaluate your marketing plan. But what I'm suggesting to producers is let's scale up sell still into the March 30th report, and then let's see if there's one or both crops that we need to buy some back with some known cost options. In call options or call verticals that would give us the ability to hold those going all the way into the middle part of August. One thing that really bothers me right now, or that could be very bothersome to the grain market, is that I think the outside markets could start to see more headwinds and present more problems for the grain markets than they are currently. I think Thursday's close was a big part of why we want to continue to scale up sell, and as Matt said, really take care of the bottom line first, because we're not out of the woods yet in 2017. And I think Thursday's trade, we saw a newswire story break from Reuters that we were going to see Mexico's agriculture secretary take a little jaunt down to South America and look to buy some corn down there. And I think there may be the possibility that they'd be looking at soy as well in other areas of the world. So you combine that with the issue that right now we've had a really nice tailwind from the crude oil and the dollar, but there's a problem. We've got record high net longs in the managed money, crude oil futures and options right now, compared with record high U.S. crude oil stocks, and Europe's gasoline stocks are burgeoning as well. So be careful here about getting too bulled up, because these outside markets, which have, I think, in large part helped us to go higher, could become more of a weight to us as we get past the crop report if USDA doesn't feed the bull.
Aaron Curtis, you talked a bit about old crop and what you thought producers maybe need to do there. You also mentioned $4 corn and $10.30 soybeans. On new crop, what are your thoughts?
Well, I kind of agree. I do agree with Mike. I think we continue to scale up sale here. We've seen some increased interest here that we poked our head above $4. That equates to, you know, some areas in that 370, 375 cash, and that seems to have gotten some attention from producers as far as sticking their tail in. You know, the last couple years, we went right up to that 440 mark. So I think between $4 and 440, I know that's a broad range, but there's going to be a lot of resistance up through that area, just like what we've seen the last couple years. So we continue to agree with Mike here that we continue to scale up sale here as we move every nickel to a dime higher. On the old crop side, Todd, every nickel higher, we've seen another round of farmer selling on old crop, and we ran into some resistance here again today at that 380 mark. But if we get into that 380, 390 mark, we're going to see another round of farmer selling on old crop corn every nickel up here. So that's something we got to keep in mind, too, at least on the old crop side. going to be a lot of resistance here as we move forward, because you know, if you talk about 50% of the corn left to buy on the size of the crop we just had, that's a lot of hedge pressure that we could see here over the next few weeks.
Do you think that is evenly spread across the whole of the Corn Belt?
Well, it is evenly spread through the kind of the customer base we equate with, and that's through Iowa, Illinois, and over through Indiana, Ohio, and a large. So that's a large portion of the Corn Belt. So I think, especially if you get farther out west, obviously they've had back-to-back years of really good crops. So you know, some of that's continued to be carryover from just kind of grinding through some of the stocks from the last couple years. So it seems to be a pretty common theme, at least with the elevator customers we talk to, Todd, that there's still quite a bit of corn to buy. Some of that in varying degrees of ownership. Some of that's on basis contracts, and some of that's still got to be priced futures-wise. So there's you know, different aspects of you know how much or what portion of the crop the farmer owns, or what portion of the contract the farmer is locked in. But it's still, you know, quite a bit of hedge pressure that could still come to this market if we do see the farmer get a little more interested on these rallies.
Mike and Matt, and I think I'll start with you, Mike. Do you think old crop corn sales are advisable at this time?
Well, I think we're right there. You know, Todd, this week we were able to get up against major resistance, 200-month moving average in the lead month corn right around that 381 and three-quarter level, beans 1065 resistance, meal 353 resistance, and wheat major, major trend line on the monthly chart drawn off the 2012 highs. Around 450. We need to push through those, I think, by the end of the week here in the short term to continue the momentum to the upside. And I think that's where Friday's close becomes very, very key. We had talked about this in DeKalb last week about getting started in new crop sales in corn, which I did do this week, and getting some more hedges in place. As if we could break above after the report, the price target would be right around 385 area in lead month. So we got within 3 or 4 cents of that. So I'm right on the cusp of wanting to do some more old crop if these technicals don't stay fired up. And obviously the technicals are going to probably play off of the South American weather. And here again, that South American weather is probably going to be peaking in the next 30 days. Corn prices in Brazil and Argentina have taken a big dump to the downside at both of their Gulf prices. And so we're real, real neck and neck now in both corn and beans with South America. If we start to see demand go away in the export sales, then it probably is going to be real tough to regenerate this South American weather play before we get the March acreage number. So we're right there in old crop, in my opinion. Use the meal technicals and use the weather as the keys.
And it might be important to note that their first crop corn would be in, but they would be just planting their second crop corn or in the midst of the middle of that. And the harvest time won't come until, I think, late May, June for that crop. So we'll be watching that corn crop at that time as well. Matt Bennett, old crop corn sales.
Yeah, you know, anytime that I think you see some sort of a move upwards, you know, and then you see basis maybe fall off just a little bit, I get a little bit concerned. You know, it looks like we're seeing maybe kind of a law of diminishing returns, if you will. Obviously, the large crop that Aaron was referencing to, you know, yeah, it's a huge crop. You're going to see a fair amount of pressure as you push up on any sort of a rally. And so I think a producer rewards the rally as you go with an incremental sale. You know, and if they want to stay long the market, you know, you can do so fairly reasonably. I don't know that I would advocate re-owning every bushel, but as far as I'm concerned, I kind of want to stay long to corn to an extent here. I want to see what the entire corn complex reacts like if we do end up getting, you know, a fair amount of excitement going into the acreage report, potentially some weather out of South America. But then what is the acreage report going to say? And, you know, I guess I've got a decent idea how I feel about it just based upon some of my travels this winter. But I think you could see a little excitement there as well.
Now, why don't you continue on in that vein? What do you think about acreage for the coming season?
Well, you know, the interesting thing that I continue to hear from folks outside of maybe, Iowa and Nebraska is that there's a fair amount of ground that's going to certainly go to soybeans. I think whenever you look at the profitability that most people have experienced here in the last year or two. You know, you look at the difference in net returns, soybeans versus corn. It certainly has taken away the anybody's inclination to do corn on corn for starters. You know, you got to remember that we were heavy corn last year with 94 million acres. And so, you know, if a lot more producers have decided, look, we're just going to take our corn acres to soybeans, you're going to have the general tendency to maybe surprise the market just a little bit with soybean acreage. And so, you know, I believe it was Mike talking a little bit about, you know, the November average. I think after today we were 10.22, which would put us, you know, 8.85 last year is where our average was. And so we're almost $1.40 above last year's average, whereas on corn, I think we're 11 cents. And so, you know, whenever I look at it that way, I think a producer, you know, their APHs have grown the last two or three years. Obviously, bean yields have been pretty darn good, Corn Belt wide, especially last year. You could be looking at some awfully decent guarantees for producers. And so I do think that your acreage discussion is going to get pretty interesting. And I'm leaning more and more every day towards corn and bean acreage, maybe getting within a million of each other. I still think we'll plant more corn than beans, although some people are saying now that we might not. I still feel like we're going to plant more corn than beans. I just don't think it's going to be a remarkable amount.
Aaron Curtis, do you think, based on this discussion and other items you have in the back of your mind, that producers for new crop soybeans should lock in a larger part of that price for their crop than they normally would at this time of year?
Yeah, I mean, just doing the math, it makes sense. I think that if you can pencil out some decent returns here, especially if we've kind of increased this yield monitor, you know, our last three-year average on bean yields nationwide is around a 49 bushels per acre. So you start to do some of the math, especially when we get into the main areas of the Corn Belt, if we can expect, you know, some better trending yields like we've seen the last two or three years, the math starts to make sense. I think you got to be very careful, like Mike and Matt alluded to, right, was that we have a lot of fun length in this bean position, right? And I know most of that's nearby, but as we start to knock off some of the variables here moving forward, if we start to see some more, you know, increase in palm oil production, get some of these veg oil stocks to use ratio stabilizing a little bit, we get a little farther into South American production and that 104, 105 million metric ton Brazil crop is a reality. We saw the farmer in Brazil sell a little bit more today. They're behind average here this last weekend, about 40% sales compared to average around 50% this time of year. We saw their currency take a reversal lower here today, so that increased sales there. They got a lot of interest in selling some old crop here as we move forward. And then we talk about this 85, 89, whatever that bean acre number is here at the end of March. It looks like it's going to be a big one. So, you know, we get to the point here when we move down the calendar here where the fund money may decide that we have to move to something else. And I think that's where there's some pretty good downside risk here as we move forward, assuming that there's going to be some decent weather as we move through the summer, Todd. So, you know, just in terms of downside risk, I think it seems like it's more available there in the soybeans than I would say the corn at this point.
Mike Zuzlo, it seems as if an awful lot is hinging on the March 31st acreage report. Is there historical evidence that suggests that soybean acres can move this much in a single year?
Not much, because of the 108-year low in the wheat acres, Todd, and that goes back to the double crop beans. I think that one of the things that's holding me back from more than 3.5% more bean acres than last year and keeping me above 90 million corn acres right now is not just the bean-corn ratio, although Matt's point about the crop insurance price very well taken, and extend beans are being talked about a lot at the meetings I'm going to this winter. But we've got this 47.2 million wheat acreage number that's at least where I'm at because of the winter wheat numbers. And I think a lot of those acres will go over into rice, sorghum, barley, oats. I've got those acres up about almost 6% from last year. And I've got a net acreage decline of about 1.4 million acres. I'm essentially tracking the same total acreage numbers 2014. I'm essentially tracking about the same corn acreage numbers 2014. if that ends up being right, then I'll be looking at a trend in new crop corn similar to 2014, which is we went generally higher into April, May, and made a double top and never came back around because weather came in very nicely. We remember that year very vividly where it looked really tough and then we just got really, really relaxed because the weather came on so well. But anyway, getting back to your question, it's just hard to get a hard bead and a good bead on the bean acres because of the wheat and because of the drought tolerance of these other crops that will probably be put in other than wheat. And obviously the lending pressure I still see west of the Mississippi River to go after more beans. But again, we're at 75, 80 cents under for new crop beans. And so all of a sudden your profitability to plant beans is waxed by that terrible basis out here.
Hey, Todd, can I follow up on that? I just was curious what Matt and Mike would think on, you know, obviously we're running ahead of normal here in terms of temperatures. And we've got some dry spots, especially in areas like Missouri on the drought monitor. You know, if we continue to see that, you know, this warmer than normal temperatures, we move into April, we tend to, if we can get into the field early, we tend to find more corn acres. Would we see a switch too much on that back into corn, or how would you read that here if this this kind of trend of warmer and, you know, drier continues here, you know, 6 weeks, 2 months from now?
Hey, Matt, can you take that up and take it up in the Western Corn Belt from Kansas, Oklahoma, all the way up into the Dakotas?
You know, what I've seen so far and what I've heard from a lot of the people that are in the seed industry, are, you know, they're saying that, yeah, actually, you know, their sales are pretty robust in most of the areas you just mentioned. You know, I think that it's interesting to talk to folks because, you know, they set their goals pretty high this year to begin with because they figured bean acres might be up due to profitability. But, you know, I think that a lot of them are actually outdoing their goals. And so, you know, I think whenever I look at acreage, especially in the West, I do think that you're going to see some surprises. I don't know that it's going to get completely carried away, but I think you're going to see a few surprises. And so I think looking at Aaron's point, I don't have any issue with that at all. I mean, if you have a really good early spring, definitely going to lend credence to the fact you're probably going to have a few more corn acres than what you would otherwise. But I do think that whenever it's all said and done, you're going to see a little bit of a surprise whenever it comes to bean acres. And I think some of the surveys have been alluding to that here in the last couple of weeks as well.
Meaning they're showing lower acres or more acres?
Well, you know, you saw, I don't know if you saw, I don't even know who AgriSource is, but I saw a bulletin the other day from AgriSource that said that they were calling for a 500,000 acres more beans than corn, which was a little bit surprising. I don't know that I agree with that, you know, but they did survey a couple of thousand folks. And so, you know, it's not like it's, you know, fake news by any means. It's maybe got some credence to it, but I think it's going to be interesting. Weather will definitely play a role. And I think they only surveyed six different states, so we have to keep that in mind as well.
All right. So, Mike Suzalo, any thoughts here other than what we've heard so far?
No, I think Aaron is right on point, and I would say in the primary Corn Belt especially, I've had two or three conversations just this week, and when I came back from Ohio and Indiana last week, they had so much moisture that they would not be, you know, hurting at all if they would dry out. And I'm hearing that from a lot of producers that if it's dry, they'll go with corn. They won't mess with their rotation unless they're pressured by the lending side of the equation to do so. And so that, yeah, I think the drier the spring, the harder it is to build bean acres up to maybe what the market's thinking right now. I think that's where Matt's point is needs to be kept in mind by the producer and the hedging side, because we could be factoring in already close to 87 or 88 million bean acres at this point. And that's where the baseline projections next week, the fresh numbers, we got a new report today that came out, but it had no changes from November. So the market kind of yawned and went on past it. But next week, we'll be looking forward to that baseline number because the Ag Forum starts on the 23rd and 24th. And I think this is where you look at the number and then look at the market reaction and the soybeans especially, because the drier it is, the harder it'll probably be to make that number.
Aaron, just to come back to you really quickly on this question, we really wouldn't know if we turned off dry and they moved quickly. We would not see that acreage switch in the USDA March 31 report. It wouldn't come until we saw the June report. Is that right?
No, you're right. I mean, that's as of March 1st, right? So some of those decisions wouldn't be made, but obviously the market would be well ahead of that, you know, as we moved into those numbers on March 31st, and as we move into April, you know, the trade would be picking up on some of that change here moving forward. So you're right, it wouldn't show up necessarily on the March 31st, but it would be obviously highly debated between then and the end of June report.
Matt Bennett, you did mention crop insurance. We're in the middle of that month. What did you want to talk about? Did you want to talk about the crop insurance setting month and itself, or how farmers can use that to their advantage as a risk management tool?
Well, you know, if after today, I believe we're 65% of the way through the month. And so, you know, I guess whenever you look at it with those kind of price guarantees at 397 and 1022, I kind of hit on it already, but I definitely feel like those are things to keep in mind for producers, especially whenever you compare it to last year. You know, it's just a huge difference. And so I think that it basically plays right into the acreage discussion. And so, you know, a lot of it's going to depend upon weather, but obviously a lot of it's going to depend upon revenue guarantees, which are quite robust this year compared to last year.
Let's wrap this up now and get a final word from each of you. I think, Mike Zuzulo, I'll start with you today. Mike?
I think the biggest thing that we want to keep an eye on is maybe the avian flu. That's starting to garner more of my attention, especially with the backup of the DDGs. There was a Newswire story that broke this week that the bird flu deaths in China could be the worst that they've ever experienced for the season. And I think when you look at Taiwan, China, South Korea, and parts of Europe, including France, this is something we really want to keep an eye on in case we start to see a weakening demand base in the soy complex.
Aaron Curtis, your final word?
Yeah, a couple things to look at here as we move forward over the short term. I think Mike mentioned it earlier. We have the USDA Ag Outlook Forum next Thursday and Friday. Typically, we see some newsworthy item out of that as the USDA talks about their baseline projections moving forward. I still think we'll get into some environment here where we talk about buying some corn acres here as this 90 million acre number continues to get thrown around here a little bit. But, you know, as far as pricing advice here, continue to urge you to kind of continue to be a scale-up seller, especially on the old crop corn. If you're carrying a considerable percent of old crop corn left, continue to reward these markets as we move up. Not necessarily negative corn here. I still think we're going to have pretty good support under the market. But on the same tune, continue to reward these markets, at least on the corn side, as we continue to edge up here.
And Matt Bennett.
I think, I've been trying to compare our situation this year to last year a fair amount. I've been asking producers, you know, do you have a plan in place just in case we end up setting the high before spring planting time frame? You know, I'm not saying that it's going to happen. There's a lot of reasons why I don't necessarily think it's going to happen, but that doesn't mean that it wouldn't happen. And so do you have a plan in place just in case something like that would happen? Because we actually have a fair amount of profitability on the table that we didn't have a year ago. And so, you know, I'm definitely in the camp that I want to have a fair amount, of my soybeans locked in, at least a floor at the very least. I definitely want to keep the upside open on a decent percentage of them. And then whenever I look at the corn market, I like, you know, looking at just some straight hedges and covering the hedges on at least a portion of those bushels. And I do think that we could see, like Aaron said, maybe a little bit of a rally to buy some acres this spring. But I don't want to get too bullish once we get, if we get more of a rally. I want to be able to reward that market and stay disciplined in my marketing plan.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can always hear the whole of our program anytime you'd like, on demand, on our website at willag.org. Our thanks to Matt Bennett, Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds of Windsor, Illinois, this week, along with Aaron Curtis from Midco in Bloomington, Illinois, and Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Don't forget to visit our website as well to pick up your tickets for the All-Day Ag Outlook. It is the 7th day of March at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Details and tickets are available online at willag.org, or you can buy the tickets, just $30, at 800-898-2400. 1065 during regular business hours Monday through Friday. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.